This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
In this month's JodBite, I'm with Professor Sarah Bridle. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Nice to have you on, finally. I've been chasing you around.
Sorry, it's been a while.
You are currently a professor at Jodrell Bank, and you moved to Manchester from UCL. How long ago?
Almost 2 years ago, yes.
Your research interests centre primarily around, so you're a cosmologist and you look primarily at gravitational lensing, or how much that tells us about the universe we live in, basically. One of your primary research interests is this thing called the Dark Energy Survey, and I know dark energy is something that fascinates a lot of our listeners because we know so little about it. So could you maybe give us your sort of lowdown on what it is and why it's interesting?
Okay, yeah. So I suppose, I mean, we don't know what it is, as you say, so there's not much I can say about it. But so we do think it's there because when we look at the universe and how fast everything is moving away from us, then we find that actually things are accelerating away from us. So they're getting faster and faster. The whole universe is expanding faster and faster all the time. And so that's why the Nobel Prize in physics was given to this discovery of the accelerating universe just a couple of years ago. So the biggest puzzle in cosmology today is, why is the universe accelerating? And we have no idea. So we just call it something. Yeah. We could call it pink elephants, but we call it dark energy. So this is something that we don't understand what it is, and we want to find out more. We're trying to measure exactly how fast the universe is accelerating, and we're trying to understand other properties about how clumpy the universe is, and putting those two together can tell us more about this dark energy, or whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is indeed. So it's kind of also intimately quite related to the idea of dark matter, which is this sort of stuff that we can see its gravitational impact in the universe, but we don't know exactly what it is either. How are the two related? And dark matter is something, well, I'll let you go on about this, but dark matter is something that we can actually study more so than dark energy. So how do you use one to look at the other?
Right, yeah, people often get sort of confused. Are they the same thing? Are they different things? So they are different things. So dark matter is, we could almost better call it transparent matter. So it's stuff that attracts other things by gravity, but we can't see it because it doesn't emit light, doesn't absorb light. And there's lots of theories from particle physics which would predict the existence of dark matter. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it's not a mystery, but we don't actually know in any detail at all what it is. It pulls things towards it by gravity. So if you imagine it, all this dark matter's out there and it's pulling other bits of dark matter and it's pulling us towards it, it can't cause acceleration. Acceleration's the opposite kind of an effect. So we can't say dark matter can explain the acceleration. So that's why we've got to come up with another thing. And maybe it's a bit unfortunate that we've called it something which sounds so similar to dark matter. So the fact that dark energy and dark matter begin with dark, well, the things we can't see, but that's about all they've got in common. In my research, I'm using dark matter to learn about dark energy, which seems a bit bizarre because we're trying to find out about dark energy. I'm using one invisible thing to see another invisible thing. But it turns out it's the method with the most potential to tell us about dark energy if we can make a map of the dark matter.
What you're also saying is that it would be more useful if we called it pink elephants and transparent matter.
I think that would be a very, very good idea indeed, yeah.
You heard it on the Jodcast first. Actually, moving on to your research. So you're using observations of these things called gravitational lenses to actually figure out where the dark matter is. So what is a gravitational lens?
So gravitational lensing is basically saying that as light travels from a distant galaxy, for example, towards us, then the light gets bent by the fact that dark matter is in the way. So the dark matter bends space-time and the light gets bent. It's actually, the maths is exactly the same as if you've got a piece of glass with varying thickness. So maybe you've got one of those, you know, old windows in an old house which has got a sort of a blob in it and the light gets distorted around it. Or if you hold up a bottom of a wine glass in front of a light or a candle, you see these smeared out shapes. So gravitational lensing, first discovered radio Einstein ring here, of course, is basically an effect which happens very rarely, that you get these very strong distortions that look almost like an arc or a ring. That happens very rarely. And what I work on is the fact that every single thing we see in the sky, every galaxy, for example, is gravitationally lensed a very, very small amount. So we can't see for any one galaxy, most galaxies, whether or not it's being gravitationally lensed. Mm-hmm. But if you look statistically, so you look at lots of galaxies all at once, you can see they tend to point in the same direction as each other. And we would expect that to happen if there was a gravitational lensing effect, because two galaxies which are nearby to each other would both travel through the same distorted, bent space-time. And so they both get stretched in the same direction. And so we'd see that kind of effect. If you look at pairs of galaxies taken from a million galaxies, then you can see this effect that pairs of galaxies do actually point in the same direction.
So the difficulty then lies in observing so many galaxies, I suppose. And so that's kind of the goal of what this Dark Energy Survey is.
Exactly. Yes. So the Dark Energy Survey is making precise measurements of 300 million galaxies over 5 years. So we're partway through taking the second year of data at the moment. Okay. And so with these 300 million galaxies, the bit that we're focusing on here is trying to measure the shapes of these galaxies extremely accurately, because actually, when you take a picture of the sky with a telescope, with optics, you know, with lenses and mirrors in, then that also distorts the galaxies. So you have to disentangle the effect of the optics from the effect of the gravitational lensing. And the effect of the optics is about a factor of 10 bigger than the gravitational lensing effect we're trying to measure. And in order to learn about dark energy, we have to measure, not just detect the gravitational lensing, but to measure that to 1% accuracy. So it becomes, you know, and that's like a factor of 1,000 smaller than the effect of the telescope.
So when you say sort of measuring the shape, so essentially you have as kind of an idea of what the shape should be like, or how does it actually work to kind of try and subtract? I'm guessing most of these sources are just going to be small dots or
really fuzzy.
Round things,
yeah, you can hardly really see, you know, that they're really there at all. So yeah, it's not like your picture of a beautiful galaxy with spiral arms and you're trying to measure the shape. You've just got, you know, a few pixels on a CCD, on a camera image. And so you're basically trying to measure the shape of that galaxy, but subtract off the effect of the telescope. And the great thing is that stars are really, really small. So if we look at stars in the image and we assume they're extremely small, then we can look at the shapes of those stars, and then we can use that shape to tell us what the telescope is doing.
Sure.
And then use that information to subtract off that effect from the galaxies.
Does that let you essentially figure out where the dark matter is?
Right, so we can use this to make a map of the dark matter. So we can look at shapes of galaxies and then look to see, are all the galaxies in a particular patch of sky pointing in one direction or another direction, and then do that for lots of patches of the sky. And we expect the galaxies to be stretched around blobs of dark matter. So we can basically take that map of the shapes of galaxies and convert it into a map of the dark matter.
And what does the dark matter distribution itself then tell you? Because,
right,
I mean, this is kind of, so you build up to getting this final result, and then that presumably is what you want to get the info out of.
Yeah, so how does that tell us about dark energy, maybe? Yes.
Yeah.
Why are we bothering? So basically we're making a three-dimensional map of the dark matter is a really crucial thing. So we actually measure the distances to these galaxies in an approximate way as well. So we can actually look at different galaxies at different distances from us. Mm-hmm. And as you know, in astronomy, when we look at far away galaxies, we're also looking back in time because the light's taken so long to reach us. So we're actually looking at galaxies which emitted their light when the universe was half its present age. So we're able to make a map of the dark matter and see how clumpy the dark matter was all that time ago when the universe was half its present age, and compare that to how clumpy the universe is today. Basically, if you imagine you've got lots of dark energy causing the universe to accelerate in its expansion, and you've got gravity trying to pull clumps of dark matter together. Yeah. And then imagine that the universe is accelerating faster and faster. If there's more dark energy, or stretchier dark energy, then the clumping rate is going to change. So if we can see how clumpy the universe was when the universe is half its present age, compare that to today, that tells us about how much the universe has accelerated.
Do you have any sort of results yet, or are they consistent with what you think is going to happen, or is it something completely surprised, or can you not talk about it?
Well, I do, there is a copious length of publication policy which prevents me from saying anything too concrete at the moment, but we are in the process of analysing the data, and we are hoping to put some results out very soon in the next few months.
Sure.
And so at the moment we're really, you know, trying to make sure we've got really good quality measurements of the shapes of the galaxies.
Okay. And I mean, but naively, you could expect that it would agree with this accelerating universe model, where because we already have these supernovae observations that tell us what they're getting further away faster. So you would expect a confirmation, basically.
Yes, we've only got a small amount of data so far. So as we get more data, we'll be able to say more about dark energy. Mm-hmm. At the moment, I think probably in the pipeline, the kind of amount of data we've got at the moment is going to roughly tell us the clumpiness of the universe overall. That's the sort of first result we're going to get. And we've just actually finished analysing a previous earlier survey, which is now finished. And we've just published a paper there where we've compared how clumpy the universe is from looking at this data, from looking at the shapes of galaxies, and compared that to what you get when you look at the cosmic microwave background, this light left over from the Big Bang.
Yep.
And we find that the clumpiness of those two different types of observation actually disagree. And so we're trying trying to understand why that is. And you may have heard some of the research that's been done here on suggesting that maybe neutrinos, the mass of the neutrino could reconcile these observations.
Right.
So that's the kind of first thing that we're likely to find out. And we want to see, do we repeat that result with the new data or not?
Sure. And I mean, is this affected by, say, how much of the sky you look at? What is the Dark Energy Survey? Is it looking at the whole sky?
So the telescope is in Chile and we're looking at 5,000 square degrees. That's 1/8 of the whole sky.
Uh-huh.
And at the moment, we're currently analysing 150 square degrees. So whatever 150 over 5,000 is, that's the fraction that we're currently analysing at the moment. And at the moment, they're taking data. So we should be about, you know, a fifth of the way through the main survey. We're not here in Manchester. We're not looking at that data at the moment. But
sure.
I think in a week's time, we're going to have that data.
Oh, cool.
Because we're all going to be going to Brighton. The whole international collaboration is going to Brighton. And we're having a big conference where we discuss how we're getting on with analysing the data. So we're busy preparing for that.
Nice. Have you had a chance to go to Chile? Or?
Not myself, but several PhD students, postdocs, including some here, have been and you know, sat there and run the telescope for the night. And it's they've been pretty happy about that.
Yeah, that is the fun bit of astronomy, getting to go to really sort of exotic...
I did go to Hawaii a couple of times, but that was a different project,
not
sure what to mention.
So that's the state of DES, I guess, that's as much as we can say now. And you're also involved in a sort of upcoming project, which is also in Chile, called the Large Synoptic Survey Telescope. Well, we have had Professor Ian Shipsey talk about this on the Jodcast before, but maybe you could give your sort of point of view on the project.
Yeah, so we're trying to get the UK into this big project called LSST that you just mentioned. So at the moment, we've written a proposal for what we think the UK should do, and we're preparing now to go and present this proposal to find out if we can get the money to join. And so that would basically get the whole of the UK into this project, and we'd be able to analyse this data so that the LSST is going to image half of the sky, so the southern hemisphere. Obviously, it can't do the northern hemisphere from Chile. So it's going to image the whole southern sky. The size of the telescope and the number of CCDs in the telescope, the number of pixels in the telescope is so big that it's going to basically redo the whole of the Dark Energy Survey in, you know, nights.
Oh, wow.
And it's going to operate for 10 years.
Okay.
And it's going to scan the whole southern sky every 3 nights. And it's going to repeat doing that. And so, and it's going to take 15 second exposures, which is much shorter than the Dark Energy Survey.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to do all these repeat observations. So it not only is it going to build up a really, really deep map of the whole sky.
Yeah.
But it's also going to be amazing for finding out about transient objects. So strange objects that change in brightness. And that's really cool in how that's going to link up with other observations, for example, with a square kilometer array that I'm sure your listeners are familiar with.
Yeah.
So to be able to find out about exploding stars, gamma ray bursts, and there's so much that can be done on that side, as well as just having really deep images, which is the bit that I work on myself.
Brilliant. I mean, who's currently organising that? Is it the US? Or?
So the project's led in the US and with involvement from Chile and some people in France.
Okay.
And so, and China's just joined, and there's some individual institutions in the UK are involved, but not the whole of the UK at this point.
One final question, actually, that came to mind when you were mentioning stuff like the SKA. So Dark Energy Survey is all in the optical, but can you combine those measurements with similar radio measurements of weak cleansing and to get sort of a more complete data set? Does that help?
We actually had a whole workshop on this Monday and Tuesday here, which was, as you know. So we had lots of discussions between the people working on radio and people working on optical and try to figure out how some of the techniques that have been developed in either area could be combined and applied. And so it is a really challenging problem to do this in the radio, just because the positions of the radio telescopes mean that you get a particular blurring of the image, which is very different from in the optical.
Right.
So it is a really, really challenging problem. But in principle, you should be able to learn different information from the optical and the radio, and that should help you to reduce the uncertainties. And in fact, one of the talks by Preena Patel, she showed us using existing data that you do learn very different things from the radio and the optical, which suggests that we're going to sort of double the amount of data, essentially, if we combine the two.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. All right. Well, thanks a lot for talking to us, Sarah. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great fun. Thank you.